So thank you, Lawrence, for accepting with your busy schedule to just come for, to give these two talks in a day. And the floor is yours.
Thanks, Antoine. It's a pleasure to be here. So Antoine explained a little bit the background of my audience. So I understand you have a mixed background, so it may well be that sometimes I go too fast. So please just tell me if you want some extra explanation of the things that I'm going to discuss. I think it's better that we try to keep everybody on board than me giving this this overview of thermoelectrics. As you already gathered from Antoine, these thermoelectrics are something that I started with in my early days at Philips, which was a lot of fun at the time because we came across all this nice theory you just heard, all this Onsager coefficients. So we loved playing with it. We did not think of any applications for it because these effects are all very tiny in the end and you cannot really draw current out of it, but it's very cute physics. So this talk is an overview of the work we've done. So this started almost 25 years ago on thermoelectrics. We still go back to it every now and then, and we keep on having nice surprises when looking at these things. But it's a topic that we do at a very modest level now. So these first few graphs I probably can go over relatively rapidly. Because Antoine talked about it in the first hour of this morning. Also, I'm sure that Antoine did a better job in getting all the sign conventions right than on the view graphs that I show here. This is actually the big problem in this field. You always get your sign wrong, and in the end, you think of how these signs should be, and you add signs at liberty. So anyway, this is the constitutive equations for thermal and electrical current, relating them to, in this case, gradients in the electrochemical potential and gradients in the temperature. And this is, in the end, how these Onsager coefficients that you have in this matrix here can be related to the thermoelectric coefficients. We've been through that. It's all a bit cumbersome to relate it to these coefficients here that are the coefficients that transport coefficients that transport physicists really know. The reason is simply historic. Yeah? These things were discovered, most of them in the 19th century, and so people saw a couple of thermoelectric effects and ended up with these coefficients. Now, if you have these coefficients, you see that they build kind of a matrix. But it's a bit weird because you have a voltage and a current on the left side, and again you have another current and a temperature difference on the other side, which is cumbersome. So you have to go back to these generalized constitutive equations, and you can do so first by going to forces, generalized forces in this matter. And in this way, you can actually express all these venerable quantities that you know from the experiment relate them to the Onsager coefficient. This you've also seen. You can calculate all these things using Landauer-Boutica theory, and yeah, from this you can get some interesting equations out. So one thing you can get out of it, for example, is that you can relate the thermal power here. S is the thermal power. Sometimes it's also entropy. You can relate the thermal power to basically the average energy of the particle that you transport across your structure. And there's a couple of observations you can make about the thermal power. It's are interesting in terms of, well, how to look at the phenomena that are ongoing. So this first relation is called the Kelvin-Onsager relation, of course. And so it's now 80 years old. There's another approach which relates actually the thermal power to the, in this case, the difference in the entropy. And I mean, there's a good reason people keep the S, because it is something like an S. This is, of course, a Seebeck S, but it's very much, it's an entropy. And so you can relate, if you really can talk about, yeah, states that are localized in your initial and the final part of your system, you can relate the thermal power very easily to an entropy current, to entropy transfer. So this is not a way to look at it, and this will be good if you start thinking about quantum dots where you have intrinsic entropy, and you can really describe a number of phenomena that way. And finally, there's the Mott relation, which relates the thermal power to the derivative of the conductance. This guy is good in linear response, but only if I don't have any rapid fluctuations in my transmission function on the scale of the the thermal widening of the Fermi energy. And of course, this goes often wrong when I have transport and nanostructures, because there we have these wild variations in transmission. So the theory is cute. How do you measure it? In principle, this is all straightforward. So the thermal power is the limit of the thermal voltage that you measure. This is a voltage that you can measure. If you apply a thermal difference, here we're talking global quantities. If you see a delta here, it means that I have a device, and the only thing that I know about a device is that I have a difference in properties from one reservoir contacting the device to another reservoir. So this is, you cannot talk in these small samples about gradients, because you have no information what's going on inside your device. So this is this global property delta T. And so S is simply defined as, well, I take a sample, a mesoscopic sample. I have a reservoir, one is cold and the other one is red hot. And I measure a voltage as a result of that. And the limit of this voltage when the temperature difference goes to zero is called the thermal power. So what happens actually physically in a device? And this is the way that we looked at these things also in the late 80s, and where we really started thinking of how these size effects could work out. Basically, you can look at your mesoscopic sample as a kind of a potential barrier hindering electrons to transfer from left to right. And imagine now you have a potential barrier which is just at the height of the Fermi energy in these two reservoirs. If I am in my left reservoir, this potential barrier means that actually no electrons can cross from here to here. Well, when I have electrons in my hot reservoir, I have a couple of electrons which are hot and they can move from left to right. Now, in this case, what I do here, the other thing that you should know, is that I do a voltage measurement. I measure a voltage, which basically is a measurement in a very high with a very high resistor. That means this guy will somehow have to respond to this influx of hot electrons at this cold region. And it can also only do so by charging up. And when it charges up, well, that's by an amount of delta mu, you will finally be able to transfer some of these cold carriers from left to right until you have like equilibrium of the currents that go across your structure. And this is all thermal power is, of course. It's charging up. And this really goes, it's very analogous to the things that Antoine said this morning, that you only can see thermal power if you have a difference between electrons and holes going across your structure. It's the same kind of thing. So what you can do now, if you have this picture, you can look at your nanostructures, think of what kind of energy barriers they could have, and you can work out the kind of behaviors that you expect. Now, how do you do this experimentally? First, there's a really big problem to do these experiments if you want to do them the classical way. The classical way is I take a piece of semiconductor, I put a heater on one side, and then two voltage probes, and so on the other side of the sample I really mount to my cryostat. I heat the sample something like a few Kelvin on one side extra compared to the other side, and I try and measure your voltage. Now, if you want a sizable thermal voltage over a structure, which is of the order of a few microvolts, you can easily work out that what you need basically is a temperature difference of a few Kelvin. Now, if your system were very big, a temperature difference of a few Kelvin is no problem at all, because you can easily heat up one side and the other side stays cold. But if you have a quantum point contact, which has a dimension of, say, 100 nanometers length, you now have to apply this difference of 2 Kelvin across 100 or 200 nanometers. Now, you should work out what that means for the temperature difference you have to create over your whole 2 millimeter sample inside your cryostat. So you need a couple of hundred, at least, temperature Kelvin difference, which, of course, you cannot create. The other problem is that in all these arguments that we talk about now about the thermal power are referring to the electron system only. All these size effects occur only in the electronic system. And there's an additional problem in the semiconductors we use in these experiments. These are 3-5 semiconductors that are polar. And if you start heating polar semiconductors, what you will do is you excite optical phonons. And these optical phonons will move, of course, from the hotspot to the cold region, and they interact with the carriers. And because of that, you can have an extra thermal power signal, which is called phonon drag. And this is kind of a spurious signal that you don't really want to have in your experiments. So you want to avoid heating the phonon system in your structure. And so, now, given all these complications, we resorted to another technique. I won't say that we were really very bright and decided it all the way directly, but we bumped into it and we figured out it worked. And what we basically use is a channel defined in a two-deck. So what you see here is gate structure on top of such a 3-5 wafer, gallium arsenide, aluminum gallium arsenide, and you see gates here. And so the center of the structure is a channel which is, well, a few microns wide still, and it's of the order of 20, 30 microns long. And the nanostructure now that we want to characterize in terms of thermoelectric properties is built in the sides of this channel. And so what we do now is we pass a current through this channel. And this current we choose such that actually we will dissipate energy into the electronic system in the channel, but only in the electronic system only. And you can do this because at low temperatures in these 3-5 semiconductors, the electron-phonon coupling is very small. So as long as you really stay with your excess energy in the order of a few millivolts, you will not excite optical phonons. And the coupling between electrons and acoustic phonons is really very slow. So what happens is actually that all the energy that you stick into your system, well, of course, you will accelerate your electrons in this direction, and here they will simply collide with each other, distribute the energy you input evenly, so you get a thermal distribution of hot electrons, but really only of the electrons and not of the of the phonons. And these electrons, so this distribution, we looked at it, actually already forms in the first microns of your channel. And then basically the electrons propagate as with a hot Fermi distribution through the channel, and they will not dissipate their energy to the lattice until they're way out of the channel. So what it means is that in your channel, you simply have hot electrons with a slightly shifted, because there's a drift of the carriers now, carrier distribution. But what really is important is actually that they have a Fermi distribution at a slightly higher temperature, 1 or 2 Kelvin higher. And what you can do now is here's your device under test. In this case, it's a quantum dot, and we'll look at it later. So what you have here now is that you have a temperature difference across this quantum dot. So that means you already built a thermal voltage across the quantum dot, in this configuration. But your experiment is not really complete yet, because now you have one thermal voltage, but it's just like a thermocouple measurement. You really have to measure a voltage with respect to something else. And so what we do is that in the other side of this channel, we build a further element of which we know the thermoelectric characteristics. And it's usually a quantum point contact, because that's the first thing we started with. So you also have a thermal voltage developing across this point contact here. And what you measure in the end is V1 minus V2. So you measure simply the voltage difference between these two leads here. It basically gives you the difference in thermal power of the device under test, in this case the dot, and that of the point contact, times, well, the temperature difference across these devices. And the nice thing is, this guy, of course, you can adjust both of these guys with the gate voltages on these gates that you attest to the sample. So you can simply see which one is which simply by varying one of the gates that controls these guys. So in the dot, for example, you vary the plunger gate and you see the Coulomb oscillations, and you know that any effect from that must be from the dot. The point contact, the nice thing is, and we'll go there a bit in a bit, you can adjust the thermal power to be almost zero, basically giving you a background to your thermal voltage measurement. There's one more trick that goes into this experiment, usually. That is that we, there's no other slide on that, but that is that we do a AC measurement. So our heating current is AC, low frequency. And since the power dissipation goes with the square of the voltage or the square of the current through this line, the electron temperature will also see a difference, but it goes with the square of your AC voltage. And that means that you can use lock-in detection at the double frequency of your driving current, which actually gives you extra sensitivity. The problem with many of these experiments is that they are small signals. You have tons of signals in your devices. They're pretty complicated devices, so you really have to filter out the right signal. But that you can do. So much of the things that I just told you are in this slide already. So here are some numbers to make it stick, that we indeed can heat the carriers in the channel only. So the electron-electron scattering time at the temperatures that we use is of the order of a picosecond, and the electron-photon scattering time is 200 picoseconds. And that really means we can get this thermal distribution going there nicely. This is the other issue, what I mentioned. So if you want to measure diffusion thermal power, the really electronic thermal power, you need a temperature gradient, well, for the quantum dot of, well, 10 millikelvins at least. That already would mean that if you have a micron-wide chip, you would have to have a temperature difference of 20 Kelvin over the chip. And that's asking for trouble. Okay, and this is the argument I had about the AC detection. So that's all the issues with it. So experimentally, well, one more thing that's not on this slide is that you have to be very careful to make your devices as symmetric as possible, because otherwise, again, you run the risk of picking up spurious voltages. So this then is this first experiment on thermal power of a quantum point contact. From the title of the paper, you can see that actually, well, we were looking at nonlinear response effects. We were not really certain we were going to find the thermal power. The idea is, what we did is we built this channel, this heating channel that you've just seen, but now we only have two point contacts on either side. And the idea was that since you have a drift now going on in this channel, and these point contacts are adjusted at different widths, you might pick up something of the drift distribution of the electrons. So we didn't really see that. What we did see was the thermal power. Basically, what you see here as a function of gate voltage is, well, this is the conductance quantization of one of the point contacts. We scan, say, the gate defining point contact 1, and point contact 2 stays constant. And what you see is that your transfer signal, it's actually quite sizable. You see a lot of oscillations coming in at the same time by the conductance of your quantum point contact also starts showing these plateaus. And you see very nicely that all of these peaks peak in between the plateaus of your conductance. And you've already seen Antoine show that this is what you should be observing. So this is the theory that predicts, theoretical calculation that predicts the oscillations in the thermal power of your point contact. And the offset, what you see here is an offset. Well, actually this is a zero, but you can adjust the thermal power of this second quantum point contact simply to be close to zero. Just to show that it's indeed an effect that goes with the power dissipation in your channel. What you see here is the thermal voltage signal as a function of current in the channel. You see that for rather low, this is the transverse voltage, you see it has a parabolic start, which you would expect from dissipation, and saturates at higher currents, probably due to the heating not being less effective. Now, the way that you can look at this, why you see these peaks, is actually you can look at the quantum point contact, and the transmission of the point contact is this stepwise transition. At each point where you open up another transverse mode in your channel, the transition goes up by one conductance quantum, and each of these channels is like an energy barrier from my previous Schuh graph for the electrons. And so each of these at each of these steps you will have hot electrons which can easily cross over the barrier, which lead to a peak in the thermal power. If your Fermi level is in a plateau, then you can look at it as the barrier being higher than the thermal energy of the hot electrons, so they cannot go across anymore, and the thermal power is zero. And that they increase in size simply comes from the averaging effect of all the other channels, because it's only one channel that you really pinch off at one time. This is a calculation that we've done. I think this is the same paper as the one that Antoine found on the archive. This is the original reference. A bunch of these things have been put on the archive again by Carlo Beinacker because they were hard to retrieve. So this is a calculation we've done basically using a model Marcus Bütiker had developed for a quantum point contact with a stellar point potential. That makes life very easy. Now you can do everything analytical. So this is a calculation we've done on the various thermoelectric coefficients that you would expect for your quantum point contact. So the straight line is the conductance. The dotted lines are the peaks in the thermal power that we measured. And what you see here as the dashed line, this is the thermal conductance. And you see the thermal conductance almost follows the real conductance, the electrical conductance, which is the Wiedemann-Franz law, but it doesn't do so completely. And this is again what you heard in the first hour, that you have this second moment distribution to which your L22 is sensitive. And so the Wiedemann-Franz law is not an absolute law. It breaks down in regions where the thermal power actually is large. And so you can also interpret it as the thermal power counteracting your thermal transport. And so you could perhaps hope to see deviation from Wiedemann-Franz if you measure the thermal conductance of a quantum point contact. So you see these are small effects, but you may try and want to see them. So that's the next experiment we tried to do. Once we understood that we could see all these thermal effects, we started out doing other experiments. I think we have set most of the things on this view graph. This is a bunch of the papers that we published. Actually, there's more now. So the first experiment we set out to do after looking at the true thermal power is looking at Peltier coefficients. And that basically what you do, what you want to see is, now we know we have one thermoelectric coefficient, we want the other one. So we want the Peltier, it will be the thermal conductance. And this is this second paper which appeared 2 years later, where now we use point contacts to actually measure the thermal behavior around another point contact. So this is the point contact where we want to study the other thermal coefficients. And one thing that you want to study, of course, is the Peltier coefficient. So what you can do is you pass a current through this central point contact, and the Peltier effect simply means that you suck, well, the electrons go from here to here, and that means you suck out the high energy electrons. They're easier across the barrier, and they will dissipate in this part of the structure. That means this region cools down a little bit, and this region warms up. That's the Peltier effect, and you have that with any device. It's kind of a filtering effect again. And you can now pick that up by simply measuring the electron temperature in the channel here and here. And how do you measure it? Well, we have point contacts here, here and here. And we can we adjust the point contacts. We know the thermal power is quantized. So actually, if you now measure your temperature across this guy here and across this guy here, you can measure the temperature on left and right hand side of your point contact. And in the end, what you result up is a measurement of the heating and the cooling of your two-dimensional electron glass on either side of your point contact, which you see here. And from the amplitude of these signals, you can directly verify actually the Kelvin-Onsard relation. Yeah? So you simply directly measure the dissipation, or actually the temperature filtering, it's not really dissipation, it's temperature filtering around a quantum point contact. And the other experiment you can do with this device is a pure thermal conductance. So here you don't pass any current through the point contact, that will complicate matters. So basically, what you do is you pass a current here, so you hope that you heat the channel in this way. Yeah, but for the rest, you don't pass electrical current to this point contact, but still you try and measure the temperature increase in this side of the channel. And again, you can do so with this quantum point contact that you have here. And you can measure it between 1 and 5. And what you see here is the increase in the temperature when you scan this gate here. And you can see that, well, more or less, this follows the conductance of the quantum point contact. We don't see within the noise too much sign of these deviations of Wiedemann-Franz behavior, but basically, the amplitude of the increase allows us to verify the Wiedemann-Franz relation. And actually, what you see here is a demonstration that there is something such as a conductance quantum for thermal energy. So this is, as you can look at the first measurement of the thermal conductance quantum. Okay, is this clear so far?
No questions. You mentioned the temperature just.
Yeah?
The temperature at which the experiment
we have done. This has been done in a simple Bath cryostat at 1.7 Kelvin, something like that. So these ballistic experiments are all best done at temperatures not too low. I think they will be a bit better if you have something like 700, 800 millikelvins. if you go too low, you get all kinds of quantum interference things and things get complicated. Yeah. The quantum dots, what I will show next, the quantum dots is on Miller-Kelvin work, unless I say this differently. Yeah?
In this regime where you see quantum interference, you can also seem, can you see some quantum coherent effects for the thermal part? I mean, can you have a coherent transport?
Yes, you can see, well, it's thermal electronic transport. Yes, you can see, perhaps I get to it, I don't know whether I will have the time. I don't think I will have the time. But yes, you can see things like thermal power fluctuations, universal thermal power fluctuations and things like that. You can do that. You can see in two-dimensional structures, you also can see localization phenomena in the thermal power. In 0D you cannot, because the GDE is zero for zero dimensional structures. It's quite amusing, this work. Yeah. So I see my time is already going way slower than I anticipated, but perhaps I can give you some idea of quantum dots. You know what a quantum dot is, I guess. Or should I explain it?
It's probably okay.
So this is a quantum dot. Which we make also in two-dimensional electron gases. There's this thing called the Coulomb blockade in quantum dots. And if you make your quantum dots smaller, you can see all kinds of nice extra structure. If you use this addition diagrams, which of course are excited states. And well, let's first start with am I going too fast? What would you expect for thermal power of a quantum dot? Now, it depends on the type of tunneling that you have. Let's first go to a big quantum dot where you have metallic tunneling, where you have sequential, which are metallic, where you have sequential tunneling. You can now work out, and now this is not really William of France, this is not the derivative anymore, Mott's behavior. This is the behavior you get for the conductance of your quantum dot is a function of gate voltage. So these are your Coulomb blockade peaks. And what you have now is actually a sequence of electron and hole transport as a function of your of the position of the level through which you can tunnel. And that means, for example, if your gate voltage is in this situation here, you will see a positive thermal voltage signal. It will go to zero when you hit the Coulomb blockade peak, and you will see a negative, a Hall-like signal when you are in this situation here. And then, of course, the whole cycle repeats. So what you will measure in this regime in the thermal power is a sawtooth behavior, which actually really reflects the electrostatic potential of your dot. And that's the nice thing about it. And actually, you can also relate this amplitude here with the charging energy of your dot. This is what you hope to see in this regime. And actually, oops, I thought I had a slight edit here. This is actually a picture of an experiment we did, and this was already in the 90s also, on a dot, a metallic dot, which has a few hundred electrons, a small charging energy, and what you see here is the Coulomb oscillations, and here's the sawtooth-like behavior of the thermal power. So that's indeed what you can observe. Of course, there's other regimes of the thermal of the transport in a quantum dot. So this is a smaller dot where you really expect to see lots of co-tunneling effects and the cytostate effects. We do this now at a higher temperature, and you still see that there's more or less at a higher temperature in this dot the sawtooth action going on. But we did this experiment basically to look at the co-tunneling contributions. So what's happening between the peaks in these few electron systems, and this is a higher order tunneling process. And basically what you can see is that the cold tunneling doesn't allow thermal power. So what you left up with in the regime, where cold tunneling dominates your Coulomb blockade, is zero thermal power, and you are now back to more or less a derivative behavior at low temperatures for the quantum dots. So there's no tunneling. Okay, let me go to the next example. This is an open quantum dot, and this is actually the question we just had about can you see quantum interference? These open quantum dots were actually studied a lot in the 90s because people wanted to study chaotic transport. There were lots of hopes to see ensembles other than Gaussians that could indicate that indeed you have chaos in these systems. And nothing of it worked, at least not in direct transport, because of heating of the carriers if you pass a current through such a dot. So what we set out to do here is take a dot like this, and now this is a dot which is not Coulomb blockade, so these contacts are open. And again, we did a thermal power experiment. This is all millikelvin work. And after looking at all the data, we ended up with a scan like this, which actually gives you the thermal power as a function of the magnetic field. So this is for different configurations, different plungers. So you see all kinds of fluctuations in the thermal power as a function of magnetic field. And this is just a given trace that we get out of this. So this is thermal power, thermal voltage fluctuations, and this is quantum interference due to chaotic paths in this quantum dot. So you can do that. What you do not see here, and this is actually the cute thing, what you do not see here is a localization signal. And this is because the localization in a zero-dimensional signal system is energy independent, so you don't expect to see a localization signal. But you can look at the fluctuations and do the statistics, and actually what we get out of our fluctuations is clear non-Gaussian behavior in the form that actually is predicted by chaos theory. And as far as I know, this is still the only experiment where somebody got something non-Gaussian out of chaos experiments. And so it's a bit amusing that you use a thermal experiment to avoid thermal heating. But of course, the amount of carriers that go to this quantum dot in this experiment is way lower than what you have in a direct transport experiment. And that's why we can do these things.
So this was not possible just from conductance?
No. I mean, Charlie Marcus did all this work, and he tried extensively, and he always ended up with heating up his energy levels. Well, your electrons retain in the dot, so if they have some excess energy, they will distribute it in the dot, and that's the problem there.
Excuse me, is this the prediction of random Marcus theory?
Yes. Yeah, so this was collaboration with Carlo Beinecker's group. Okay, well, let me just give you one last example because my time is running out already. What you also can do with the same dot is look at things that had been predicted that actually chaos can induce electrons to be confined in the dot. And because of that, you could have kind of a charging energy in a dot which is open on one side. And there were all kinds of scaling theories about this. And so basically we tried to do a similar experiment. So what we looked at is a dot like this, where we have one contact in the tunneling regime, one contact open, and we can vary it, of course. And we look again at the thermal power of this dot. And what you see when this second contact is also almost closed is pretty nice sawtooth oscillations due to the thermal power. And if you open up this lead more and more, and this is the transmission of this point contact that's going to the outside world, you see that we still see Coulomb oscillations, sawtooth oscillations, but they get smaller and smaller. And so you can fit this pretty nicely with the theory, and basically the scaling that was predicted in this model of Karsten is something that could really reproduce the data pretty nicely. So this is a way to use thermal power to actually directly measure the charging energy of a quantum dot. Okay, I think I'll stop here because otherwise I'll use up all my time for this work. Okay.
You can take a few more minutes if you want to.
Well, I don't know. So this is basically the graph that I had. So what you see here, this is the scaling that we predicted or that we expected for this particular experiment. And what you saw is that for very open quantum dots, actually, we didn't see much scaling anymore. And so we concluded that in this regime, indeed, the chaotic behavior in the dot was causing the Coulomb blockade that we observed. So what else do I have? I mean, what do you want to hear? I have something on Kondo resonances, I have something on thermal rectifiers, I have something on magnetic semiconductors, but I think...
Or maybe you can say something on the Kondo regime.
Well, that's the next slide. Actually, this is not a very simple thing. So the hope was to be able to say something more about Kondo by looking at a quantum dot where you basically are at a Kondo resonance. That means you have to open up your leads sufficiently that you get a Kondo effect, and the idea was let's see what we can see of the thermal power there. So what you want to look at is the strong coupling between the Kondo regime and not really the regime where you have two Coulomb blockade. And what you already see in what you see here is in the conductance measurements are that you are in the Kondo regime here and here and here, and in between you are not. And what you see for the thermal voltage is actually that in these Kondo peaks, in between the Coulomb oscillations, you see a kind of a plateau in the thermal power. And this was unexpected. So this is certainly not Mott's law behavior, and it's a bit unclear what it is. So what we think we've observed, so what we see here, what you really expect for a true asymptotic Kondo behavior is not too much of a difference between, you would expect a zero thermal voltage in this position here. We see a kind of a plateau in our thermal voltage signal, and actually what you can ascribe this to is that the dot that we have here is something more like mixed valence regime. And yeah, that was all I wanted to say about the Kondo. We're getting back to this now. What we think that actually is also playing a role here is spin entropy. What we looked at in the thermal power so far is basically, well, it's an entropy current. And the entropy is driven mainly by the temperature that you have in one reservoir that's seen in your sample. However, if you have a spin-sensitive system, the entropy is also driven by the spin degeneracy in your quantum dot. And so this is actually our newer suggestion is that what we're seeing here simply is the fact that our quantum dot now has a single spin, which adds a factor k log 2 to the spin entropy term. And that's actually a suspicion we're still trying to verify. So we're not longer so certain that this is mixed valence, because then we should see as much hole-like mixed valence as we see electron-like mixed valence. And we always see electron-like mixed valence. It's always the same term. So the suspicions now are that this, what we see here, actually is not so much a correlation term, correlation effect, it's simply an effect of the spin entropy reflected in these systems here. Okay, I think I should stop here. There's still many things you can do with these quantum dots. I think you had somebody from Geneva lecturing here last week. So you can try and do these things on energy harvesting. We're trying experiments like that. We work with coupled dot systems. Things get very complicated. The message is always these are very small signals, and you really have to be sure that you see the signal that you want to see, because there's when you do these multiple current experiments, there's always cross terms that can show up in your experiments, and you really have to know what you're doing. Okay, I think I'll cut it here and then go to the topological insulators.